And welcome to another Scouting Post podcast. This is Kirk Ludeke. I'm glad you could join me. I'm recording on a nice Sunday afternoon. We've got a couple games from the Memorial Cup tournament in the books, and I figure this is as good a time as any to do another Scouting Post podcast, audio file, whatever you want to call it. Now, I had a great conversation with a good friend and OHL analyst, Dominic Tiano, the other day, and we both agreed we need to do one of these together. And I am going to figure that out between now and the NHL draft. That is a promise. But for now, it's still me just flying solo while I continue to get the hang of doing things like this. And there's no shortage of things to talk about. Also want to involve Reed Duffy in that upcoming podcast. Reed's a great guy and a good friend. And for those of you who don't know Reed, he is the play-by-play for the Hamilton Bulldogs of the Ontario Hockey League. And he's was one of the youngest play-by-play guys ever to do an AHL broadcast. And he's been involved in the business for quite a while. And he's a passionate hockey fan and a Bruins fan. So all in all, you add those three guys together and you'll definitely get a Bruins-centric look at the draft. But at the same time, I mean, we plan to break it all down for you and give you the best possible listen as it pertains to the 2016 entry draft. Now, having said that, Memorial Cup tournament is ongoing right now, and the Boston Bruins have a couple of prospects playing in that. The first one, Jeremy Lauzon, is a great news story. For those of you who may not be tracking or remember, it was around mid-April. As a matter of fact, I was in Grand Forks attending the Under-18 championship when I got the news that he took a skate to the neck. Very scary injury along the lines of Clint Malarchuk and some of these other players that have had their exposed necks sliced by a skate. In Lauzon's case, as I understand, the jugular vein was not severed, as was the case with Clint Malarchuk. However, you know, any injury along those lines, anytime you take a skate blade, which is razor sharp, and it involves us, you know, cutting flesh. I mean, you have the potential for arteries to be severed, for tendons to be severed. You know, Dennis Seidenberg suffered a nasty injury to one of his arms, and it severed some tendons in his forearm and wrist area. And he was lost for the entire 2010 playoffs. And one only makes you wonder how things might have been different for the Boston Bruins if Seidenberg had been in the lineup. As we all know, he was not. They lost to the Philadelphia Flyers after being up 3-0. Might have been a slightly different outcome there. Obviously, one player is probably not going to be the difference maker, but you never know. So skate injuries of any kind when you're talking about cuts to any part of the body are pretty, you know, they're cause for pause, and you don't want to take them lightly. And in Lauzon's case, he ended up missing the rest of the second round of the playoffs. He missed the third and fourth rounds when his Rouyn-Noranda Huskies captured the President's Cup, which is the Quebec League championship, for the right to represent the Quebec League and the Memorial Cup. But he made it back for the big tournament. In the very first game that the Huskies played against the Brandwee Kings, he continued to show everyone why there's talk and chatter that he was a terrific value pick at 52nd overall last June. And this is a player I've just had a lot of time for before the 2015 draft. He was flying under the radar, was ranked as one of Redline Report's most underrated players in their final draft guide issue. There's a special awards section in the back, and he was one of those players, along with another Bruins draft pick, Cameron Hughes, who just finished his sophomore season at the University of Wisconsin. So we knew Jeremy Lauzon was really a good prospect. You're talking about a player that's about 6'2", skates really well, real good head and vision, you know, effective puck mover, all the things you look for, and he plays with some bite. I mean, he's not a big, huge, nasty, physically intimidating guy, but he's not afraid to take the body. He's a pretty good open ice hitter. He will drop the gloves to fight, though he's not one of these enforcer type, you know, really scary baggage smasher defensemen. But at the same time, he's going to go to the defense of his teammates, and he's not afraid to get in there and get his nose dirty. So I think Boston fans have a lot of reason to be optimistic about him. I talked a little before about Lauzon, and what to me makes him so impressive is that he's nowhere near the size and pure shutdown potential of a Brandon Carlo, who was taken 37th overall. And he's not quite the toolsy, extravagant, flashy potential of a Jakob Zboril, who went 13th overall last year. But when you take both Carlo and Zboril and you pull out the best things about him, Lauzon is kind of a hybrid mix of those attributes. And for that reason, I've been saying since the draft that he has the potential to be the best pro of all three. Now, will that actually happen? I don't know. And I'm trying not to overhype the kid. And you know, he's not a player that's going to just grab you and you know, light his hair on fire every night and take the puck up the ice and do all these amazing things. But by the same token, he's about as steady as they come. He's going to use his head in all three zones, and he has the ability to run the power play. He's more of a setup man than a trigger man, and I just really like this player, and it's just excellent that he's healthy enough to come back, and then he had a really good showing in that first game. Was it all perfect? No. But when you think that, you know, essentially that he missed over a month of action and hasn't seen game work since the second round of the Quebec League playoffs, to go in against the WHL champion Brandon Wekings and perform like he did, I think, you know, we can certainly give him a pass for a couple maybe questionable decisions and turnovers he made. And if anyone's making an issue of that, well, you know, I just got to say context is everything there, folks. You know, come on, let's get real here. You obviously don't want to just put a positive spin on everything, but I think most NHL guys would be pretty impressed with the fact that a guy who hasn't played in over 30 days looked like he did. So we'll leave it at that. The other Bruins prospect that's in the Memorial Cup is Red Deer Rebels forward Jake DeBrusk. By virtue of Red Deer hosting the Memorial Cup, he's in. And again, I have time for this young man. He's a late 96 who was a bit of a surprise pick at 14, but when you look at what the Bruins were trying to do in terms of having guys that can finish and put the puck in the net, he shouldn't be all that surprising that he went there, just because he did score 42 goals a year ago. And you know, I've talked about this groupthink mentality before, where certain players get, you know, publicly ranked at a certain position in the draft, and either if they slide, then all of a sudden they're the steal of the draft, or if they jump up and are taken earlier, they're a reach. And you know what? Time in history may prove that Jake DeBrusk was a reach, but I'm not ready to go there yet. Certainly, offensively, he took a step back in terms of his goal production this year, but I still look at some of the plays he made and the goals he scored, and he didn't forget how to put the puck in the net, and it wasn't a fluke that he got 42 a year ago with the Swift Current Broncos. He was just in a little bit of a different role, I think, and because he's not a flashy, dynamic, electric presence who brings you out of your seat, people have a tendency to kind of pick on him. He becomes an easy target and a scapegoat for, I think, people who are a little less informed. And certainly there's an element of people who are stat watchers. They don't have access to the games and the footage and the film that some of us do. They're not able to go to WHL games and see them. And so I can certainly understand why they would look at the numbers and maybe have a negative opinion about the kid. But yeah, I'll just point out that the players that the Bruins passed on to take DeBrusk have not done anything at the NHL yet. So the Bruins aren't wrong about the kid until they are. And I think that, you know, when I go on the internet and I have exchanges on Twitter and I see certain message boards, there seems to be this movement to try to continue to harp on Kyle Connor and Matthew Barzal. And now you're seeing it a little with Thomas Chabot from the St. John Sea Dogs, that the Ottawa Senators took a few picks after Zboril and after the Bruins were finished with their run of three. And look, I mean, we can Monday morning quarterback and scout it all we want. But while you may raise points and you can point out all day long until the cows come home that Kyle Connor had 71 points as a freshman with Michigan, and yes, he did sign with Winnipeg and he's going to go into pro hockey next year, so we'll soon find out if this debate is going to get settled, or at least Connor's going to take a major lead. But both he and DeBrusk are going to be in pro hockey next year. DeBrusk more than likely with Providence of the AHL. And Connor will either make the Winnipeg Jets out of camp, or he might find himself in the Manitoba Moose, and this debate will rage on. But again, I caution people from just making declarative statements. You know, if you've seen Jake DeBrusk enough and you feel comfortable in that, okay, great. You know, this is America, this is Canada. Opinions are what make the world go round. But ultimately, I think it's hogwash. And when I watched Jake DeBrusk the other night, I mean, London really took it to the Red Deer Rebels. The London Knights are the prohibitive favorite to win the Memorial Cup coming into the tournament. They have no flaws. They're an unreal offensive power. They've got defense, and then Tyler Parsons is playing great in net for them. This reminds me of the Hurkacz Circus, University of North Dakota, back in 1986-87, where it seemed like when teams would go up against them, all they could pretty much do is ice the puck, because they're so good at puck possession. They gain the zone effortlessly. Their zone entries are just something to behold. And then they just they possess it, and they work the zone until the defense gives them something to hit. And they open up lanes, and you just have players like Mitch Marner and Christian Dvorak and Matthew Tkachuk, who's, you know, to me, I would take him in the top three. He probably won't go top three, but if he doesn't go fourth to the Edmonton Oilers or whoever trades up with Edmonton to land that fourth pick, then something's gone really wrong, because Tkachuk is just phenomenal. The Knights are an unbelievable team. So to sit there and say, well, you know, DeBrusk was invisible and against the Knights, I mean, it was one game. Let's give him a little more opportunity, because the Rebels, are as the host city, they didn't win the WHL. They were knocked out in the third round by the eventual champ, Wheat Kings. So, in all honesty, I mean, they're kind of playing from behind here, and it certainly showed against the Knights. The Knights are just a powerhouse team. Now, if DeBrusk continues to not make much of an impact, I mean, we'll call it as we see it. But I got to see a little bit of DeBrusk in the playoffs when Red Deer was still in, and I thought he was, you know, arguably top two, top three players on that team. And again, he's not going to jump out at you. I mean, you have to really look for him. You have to isolate him. But he's just so smart, has terrific hands, and I like his attitude. So, call me a homer if you want, and you know, we can debate all day. But, you know, if you're going to debate me and you're going to point to stats, or you're going to bring up Barzal or Connor, I'm going to tell you what I said earlier, and that is, you haven't proven a thing. You can be unhappy all you want, and you might be proven right, and the Bruins might regret passing on those other guys. But until Jake DeBrusk fails to live up to where he was drafted and the kind of role that the team has for him, you know, it's kind of a pointless exercise. I think we can all agree to disagree, and we can be okay with their opinions. I just don't like the snark, the smarmy sarcasm that I see from some people. And some of those guys ought to know better, and they know who they are. And if you're listening to this and you're one of those guys and you say, gee, is he calling me out? I don't know, man. If the shoe fits, wear it. And again, I'll talk to you any day about it. You want to, you know, engage me on this, and we can talk through and we can debate. And, just one last thing, you know, when I'm talking to some of the NHL guys and player development guys, and they're saying, yeah, DeBrusk is playing pretty well, and this is from outside the organization, I would just ask you, I didn't see you as part of that conversation. So, I mean, if you were part of that conversation, please point it out to me, because I'm pretty sure you weren't. So, again, we can agree to disagree, and we can have all sorts of debates that are grounded in what we know and fact. But I can't get past the fact that I think, by and large, opinions of Jake DeBrusk have been really unfair to the kid. And as I said, people who ought to know better have been right in the middle of this. And I would just point out that if Jake DeBrusk had been a kid that you were high on, you'd be all about this guy. So I think, it's not the pot calling the kettle black. I think, like I said, we can agree to disagree, and you can, in your heart of hearts, still believe that Barzal or Connor should have been the guy. But until that is definitively settled, you know, the jury's going to be out. So that's all I'm going to say about that. So moving on, let's talk about something different, because I'm passionate, kind of gets me fired up. Again, I've talked to Jake DeBrusk. I've looked at his game. I really think he's an underrated player. Sure, I mean, it's hard to look past the statistics, and I get that. But if that's what you're doing and that's what you're basing it on, and then you're listening to, like I said, that kind of groupthink that is so pervasive in draft analysis, and you're basing your opinion on what everyone else is saying, you're probably missing the boat. And you know in your heart of hearts, if you're one of those people that's doing that, and you know you really don't have a whole body of work and evidence that you've developed for yourself, then you probably can come down a little bit and just, you know, maybe get behind the player and hope that he's successful. And I know I'm preaching to the choir here, so I'm going to get off my soapbox now. Grand Forks, under 18. I know I promised a podcast a while ago, and I never really did it. I hope folks can understand. I work for the Red Line Report, and because of the proprietary nature of our publication, we are a pay service. There are just certain things I can't go into detail. This is not like my 2011 draft blog when I was free and solo, and I was leveraging my sources both inside Red Line Report and outside with other NHL organizations to do analysis and get opinions on players. I can't do that. I don't have the leeway to do that. And out of respect to my boss, Kyle Woodleaf, I just am not willing to compromise my integrity by coming on here and giving a lot of detailed information on players. I could have hours and hours of in-depth analysis. But in the interest of being fair, in the interest of giving you a reason to continue to listen to this podcast, I will dish on some observations that I certainly had, from the tournament. So on a few players. So let's talk about the dynamic between Dante Fabbro and Jacob Chychrun as defense partners for Team Canada. Now, I came into the season as high on Jacob Chychrun as anyone. I fully was on board with the idea that he was going to be the number two guy behind Austin Matthews, and that, you know, whoever was picking first would likely take Matthews, but Chychrun would be a heck of a consolation prize. And I'll tell you, fair or not, right, wrong, indifferent, I've come off of that. Having seen him live, there's no denying that he has tools. Great size, excellent skater, can really move the puck. He shows you big-time ability in flashes, and I love that about him. But the problem is that the under-18s, he did just that. He only showed it in flashes. Meanwhile, his D partner, the right-shooting Penticton V's Boston University recruit Dante Fabbro, he was really the guy who stirred the drink from that blue line. I think if you talk to most NHL scouts, and they're completely honest, they won't hesitate to say that Dante Fabbro, if he wasn't the best defenseman in the entire under-18 tournament, he was right up there. He's two or three at worst. And he was so impressive because here's a player who just has this panoramic vision and the ability to survey the ice, and he makes the right decisions. I mean, this is one of the things that is really hard to project with any player at any level is their hockey sense and how quickly they can read, react, process, activate. All of these things are critical in the modern NHL for a defenseman. It isn't enough anymore. In the old NHL, you had these big, huge defensemen who were massive and couldn't really move all that well. But as long as they could impede the progress or launch big hits in the open ice or pin a guy up against the wall and immobilize him, that was okay. But the league has evolved. The defense position is so much more now than it has ever been. It's not just about getting back and puck retrieval quickly, being first on the puck, and then having the hockey sense and the vision to survey where you need to move that puck out of the danger area so that your team can start the transition game. Speed is the name of the game in hockey, and the teams that can transition the puck and take it up the ice with speed are the ones that are the most successful. It is no surprise to anyone, and should be no surprise to anyone, that the Blues and the Sharks and the Lightning and the Penguins are your final four NHL teams because they're all very good at that. They all have defensemen that are able to wheel it back, beat forecheckers in a foot race, and not only get to the puck first, but also have the awareness and the peripheral vision and the reaction time to get it to the right spot on the ice. And this is what I think Fabbro does better than just about anyone. He's so decisive with it, and he moves the puck well defensively. And then when he brings it up the ice, he can see these lanes opening up, and he can hit forwards in stride with an on-target pass. And it was really something to watch. It was just really intriguing to see him control the flow of the play like he did from the blue line, and to watch Chychrun kind of deferring to him. And Chychrun kept, you know, giving the puck over to Fabbro, because it was almost as if Chychrun understood, hey, this guy has really got his mojo going, and he's making plays. So let me just, you know, give him the puck and see what he does with it. To a certain extent, that's a little unfair to Chychrun, but not really. I mean, it's kind of just the way it happened. Fabbro really elevated his stock, and it's going to be fascinating to see if there's a team picking around 9 or 10 or 11 that now maybe had Fabbro closer to 17 and 18, that's really moved him up. If I had to guess, I think Chychrun's going to continue to fall. I don't know how far he'll fall, but this is a guy who, when he does, whoever gets him, you're going to immediately hear, oh, steal of the draft and awesome. And you know what? If a team is getting Chychrun around 10, 11, then yeah, they're getting a very good value. But I'm just not sold on how well he thinks the game to know if he's going to be as good as everyone thought. Is he going to be a good NHL defenseman? I think so. Fabbro, on the other hand, he's still got that high-end potential. He doesn't have Chychrun's size, and you know, he's got to improve his shot. His shot's pretty average, but he's everything else is just such a high level. And when I was talking to another NHL scout about him, he kept saying, you know, he's a lot like Duncan Keith. And I keep hearing Duncan Keith, and I hate the whole comparison thing, but you know, I have to do it as part of my job. And you know what? It's exactly right. And if you look at Duncan Keith, you know, he's not a big goal scorer, but he's just so intelligent and instinctive. And I'm not saying Fabbro is another Duncan Keith, but he could be up in that kind of potential contribution and style of play kind of thing. So, you know what? I just found it was a fascinating dynamic. Now, Mikhail Sergachev, Windsor Spitfires. I think skill-wise, he was probably the best defenseman I saw at the under-18s. There was no question. I don't know that I've seen a better skater kind of do what he does in a long time. There was one play he made where he was on a full back pedal, and I think it was against Switzerland, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, I'd have to pull out my notes. But it was an unbelievable play because he's in full back pedal. The Swiss player that had the puck kind of got in too close to him, and Sergachev was able to all of a sudden shift direction from full backward skating to forward and steal the puck at the same time. And just like that, he'd blown by the guy and is heading up the ice the other way. Now, he wasn't able to finish off the scoring chance. The attempted pass was knocked away by the Swiss player that was back on D. But you can't teach that kind of ability. You either have it or you don't. I mean, you can coach it to an extent in terms of improving someone's skating, but the awareness and the instinct to instantly react, aggressively decide, hey, I'm going to take this guy's given me, he's kind of closed into within the separation where the gap would allow him to protect the puck and maintain possession. And I'm going to take a risk here. If Sergachev blows that and he doesn't make the play, he's now given the Swiss player a free zone entry and likely a path right to the net. Instead, he not only just instantly changes direction and creates a turnover, but he's creating a scoring chance the other way. And that's just good stuff. And that's why I think Mikhail Sergachev and probably Oli Ualevi, though I didn't see him live and he wasn't at the U18, so I'm not going to go into detail about him. But I think there's a very good potential that both of those guys are going to be drafted before Chychrun. And if not, you know, good for Jacob Chychrun. He's a good kid. I don't want people to think I'm running him down. I'm not. But I talked earlier about groupthink. There is this pervasive groupthink still out there that Chychrun's going to be this franchise cornerstone. And you know what? He might be. But I also think there's some question marks about him and about his head and his ability to process, read, react. And I don't know that it's high-end enough level to where he won't be much more than a 3-4. And based on where he was projected, that would be a disappointment. So I think you need to set the Aaron Ekblad comparisons aside. I'm not sure that's appropriate, but ultimately I could be completely wrong. And, we'll just see what happens. But if I had to put money on it, I think Chychrun's going to fall lower than most are projecting and most mock drafts are going to have him. And yes, whoever takes him is going to get a good value pick and there'll be a lot of reason for excitement. But if you're sitting there and you're saying, why didn't my team trade up to get him? I've just given you a pretty extended conversation as to why a team might not make that aggressive decision to boldly move up and get him. Good player, nice player. I think he's going to play in the NHL. I'm just not sure he is the guy that everyone thought he was coming into the season. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Some other players at the under-18s that really impressed me. I want to talk about a kid that is not eligible this year, but will be a 2017 pick, and I'm telling you, he'll be a first rounder unless he takes a major step back. And that's Finnish forward Eli Tolvanen. Now he played in the USHL this year for Sioux City, and or he's either Sioux City or Sioux Falls. I'm being unprofessional here. Anyway, USHL player, really impressive. Instinctive pure scorer type. This is a player that throughout the tournament in Grand Forks was making an impression somehow. He's not a big kid, but he's one of these players where he's got the swagger to him, and he's just able to find ways to manufacture scoring chances. And he's got this laser release that's scary, and the puck comes off his stick like it's been shot from a cannon. And he hits very small spaces. Kyle and I were sitting together, and we were at one of the rinks there, not the main one, not the Engelstad, but the second arena that some of the games went over to in Grand Forks. We were much closer to the action. We happened to be sitting right over by the side that Tolvanen scored this memorable goal in, and he beat the defender with just pure speed to the outside, and then curled around him, and the goaltender, the Czech goalie, was in perfect position to make the save. And there was a tiny little spot over his left shoulder on the short side, top corner, and Tolvanen hit it. And I said, ooh, I mean, this, the ability, the speed with which he made that play. And I thought, well, is this, is he just having a great game or what? And as it turned out, no. I mean, that's pretty much him. He did that. He did that every game. And so I really like the kid. He doesn't have ideal NHL size, but he's a skater. I think he plays bigger than his size, a little gritty son of a gun. And that shot, I mean, the puck, I mean, when he shoots the puck and he misses the net and you hear that thing hit the glass, it's this big, heavy, loud thud. Where you really appreciate the amount of power and the torque he gets on that sucker. So this is a kid I really like. He reminds me of an apex predator, where he's on the prowl constantly looking for a scoring chance. And when he gets it, a lot of times his prey, there's nothing they can do about it. He's just going to take him out. And, there's no flight or fight. It's pretty much flight. He puts defenders on their heels, and he pretty much can impose his will on a game. So I'm really intrigued to see how Tolvanen plays next year. So on that note, we're coming up to 30 minutes, and I think I'm going to cut it here. Thank you for joining me. We're going to have more on the NHL draft in the next month or so as we get ready for the big event in Buffalo. I will be there, and I will be staying connected to my sources to give you, some kind of late-breaking news as I get it. But for now, I want to thank you for joining me on the podcast and for watching the blog. Now that I'm finishing up with my my work at Red Line Report and the New England Hockey Journal, I'll have more time to be blogging some more. But again, sheer volume, as I explained earlier, I can't go to the level of detail because of my status with Redline. So I know you guys understand, and I appreciate you guys listening to the podcast. All the best to you. And if I don't talk to you before then, happy Memorial Day weekend. Don't forget what that holiday is all about. And I have several good friends that didn't make it back from Iraq and Afghanistan that I'll never forget. So, you know, if you have it in your heart to remember those men and women that have made the ultimate sacrifice, I ask you to please do so. For the Scouting Port, this is, the Scouting Post, this is Kirk Ludeke, and cheers and take care. Bye-bye.